Meeting to order. Good morning, everyone. It is 9, let's call it 9:30. We'll be all on time today. Could we get a roll call, please?
Andrew Everode. Peter Leeds.
Present.
Jason Madison.
Here.
David Swartz.
Here.
Paul Sterren.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Thank you. Okay, and call to the public. We do have a public member here, Mr. Bokenugan. Do you have anything to start with, or is whatever you'd like to talk about on the agenda?
It's on the agenda.
Okay.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay, then we'll wait for that. Let's see if we could go through the adoption of the minutes. Has everybody reviewed those? Does anybody have any corrections? Give you a few minutes if you haven't already checked it. Whenever anybody's.
I'll make a motion, Mr. Chairman, that we accept the minutes as written.
So moved. So we have a second. Any
second
discussion on that? I agreed. I didn't see any corrections needed. Great job again. Is that you, Kurt?
Yep. He rocks, doesn't he?
He does rock.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. Okay, we have a motion. All those in favor of the adoption of the meeting minutes from April 9th of this year, 2019, say aye.
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 Okay, the motion passes. Let's see. Next, moving right along, is Section 5, review, discussion, and possible action on the following. Item number A is legislative update regarding House Bill 2569.
Pins I will start, and I'm sure Ms. Pritzel will be adding. She does. She's just wonderful with it. This bill becomes effective on our board meeting date, I think, on August 27. And what it does is allow for what the governor is calling universal licensure. We think it will have an impact on the home inspectors, not so much on the other professions that we license and regulate, because their standards are nationally set and very similar from state to state. So what it provides for is anyone who is comparably licensed in good standing in another state can come here, and as long as they've been licensed for 1 year in their original state, they come here, they establish residency, and then they can apply under 2569 for this universal license. And how it will impact you, we believe, is that they will not have to provide 30 parallels and will not have to provide the one report for approval prior to our licensing them.
And that's how the definition of comparably licensed
lands? That's how the governor's office is looking at it, and as well the AG's office has opined that as long as home inspectors can say they are licensed in another state, and there are 32 states currently, Rob did the review, that license them with differing standards than ours, we have to grant them.
And Lisa, can I make one minor mm-hmm. edit to that?
Of course.
It's not ultimately an issue of getting to the license. The decision for the board would be whether it's at the same practice level. So how they get to the practice level, it's not comparable in terms of how you become licensed. It's whether the license itself authorizes you to do something at the same practice level as it would here. So they're sort of, there's not really an issue regarding how they got to that license.
So is there any kind of reference to having passed the national exam? They must have, so their state must have required the national exam.
Yes, I think so.
Yeah, there are some basic standards that would still be applicable. And additionally, any state-specific, anything regarding state-specific laws would still be able to be tested in addition to simply having a license from another state. But the sort of the real brief background to this was appended onto an existing statute providing for limited reciprocity for military spouses. So if you're a CPA in Massachusetts and your spouse is in the Air Force and they get transferred to Duluth, you're not penalized by being unable to work because you're married to someone in the military. So it was sort of a general statute that they appended this onto. So ultimately the main idea is you're licensed for something at the same level, and then if there is a state-specific law, you have to be aware of that, or the state's able to require you to be aware of that.
Okay, the majority of the license plates I see around here from other states are from California. They appear, I believe they have a trade practice.
That's it. That's all they have.
So that doesn't get it done, right?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I
don't think. But if you're licensed in, I think Washington has a practice act, they may not require the same things we require to license them, but if they're licensed home inspectors and they move here, establish residency, and apply under this statute, we have to recognize it.
And is the only thing that you're looking for then is that the national exam is required in that state?
There's actually more.
There's more.
Yeah.
If you could give us a rundown.
There's a nice little blurb that we're going to post.
Yes. Kurt and I have been working on this.
It's not published yet, but it is. It's kind of just on the website still ready for me to click the button to say publish it, but this is what we have thus far.
Yeah. Now the one thing an applicant reading that would have to understand is under the second main bullet point, where its applicant is currently licensed or certified in another U.S. state, the second bullet point underneath that, applicant met the minimum education work experience, that refers to in the state that they are already licensed
right.
in. That does not apply to our minimum education, work experience, et cetera, requirements.
Has never been disciplined.
So we should add that in the state of original licensure in the second.
No. Never been disciplined isn't 100%.
I thought
we have to correct that.
I think that was like some time parameter, didn't it?
There is. They can't have been revoked or suspended.
Oh.
But if they are under discipline,
I thought it was like a few years or
that's
something.
In there.
3 years.
They're under investigation, I think, is one, too.
Yeah, under investigation allegations. We're actually going to take it to the board so the board can look at it and, in their interpretation, determine how this state will treat it. So there are quite a few things having to do with investigations, allegations, disciplinary action to be considered.
Yeah, the specific statutory language, and this isn't really legal, this is just the straightforward language, is the person has not had discipline imposed by any other regulating entity, but then the next sentence, if another jurisdiction has taken disciplinary action against the person, the regulating entity shall determine if the cause for the action was corrected and the matter resolved. If the matter has not been resolved by that jurisdiction, the regulating entity may not issue or deny a license until the matter is resolved. So it's not quite that there's just never been discipline. There is an aspect of there's never been discipline, but if there has been discipline, has it been cleaned up?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah,
disposition of the...
And I'm absolutely right. The board ultimately is going to have to...
So you say this is going to go into effect soon?
August 27th.
Okay. This doesn't bother me.
It doesn't bother you?
No. When I
it should bother you, Peter.
No, this doesn't bother me. This is in the certification process. Doing hundreds of thousands, it seems, applications. I feel that these guys are going to be a lot more qualified than some of these applicants that we already pushed through. At the beginning, okay? Then we will meet these gentlemen and ladies across the table if they mess up our rules, all right, if they have a complaint against them. And that's where we can really evaluate this. But getting licensed doesn't really bother me as much as doing the proper job. And if they don't do the proper job, they'll be meeting us. But if they do the proper job, this doesn't bother me at all.
Okay. But that is the tail end of this, is if we do get applications under this new statute, we may end up having more enforcement actions because these people applying under the statute may not understand our state-specific requirements.
I think we need to come up with a brochure.
The failure rates of materials here, and everything's different.
I think we need to come up with a brochure. I think we actually have to give these applicants that come in on reciprocity, we need to give them what we expect of them in this committee, okay? A copy of the standards, because they're going to be changing standards.
It's all on the website.
But at least something to refer to,
right.
so the resource.
So that they know that there are differences, and that they need to be aware of those differences, and that we're going to hold their feet to the fire on those differences. So I think this is all a communication issue.
Okay. That's our plan. I mean, all this material is available on the website. We're putting the notice out. The governor's office is very happy about putting the notice out. There's going to be a separate application. It'll be similar to the standard application for certification, but it'll be specifically for this universal licensure application. And the governor's office is going to want to know how many applications we get under this particular statute. So we'll have to report on it. We don't know how many we'll actually see, because you're right, I think most of our new applicants are California folks that are moving over, but you never know. So
was this a negotiation that you were just told this is how it's going to be? Because I know when we were, when licensing started, all of us existing old-time home inspectors, we had to provide evidence that we had done at least 100. So, you know, realistically, somebody could go to the easiest state there is, go get a license there, and then run into here.
Well, he has to wait a year.
Right.
Then he can run into here.
Well, and we raised the issue, Patty and I, of the difference between a title act, like Paul was talking about, and a practice act, where the title home inspector is the only thing protected, and there really aren't any standards, and there's no regulation when someone is harmed, and the governor's office representatives didn't understand the difference between the two. So that's on us now. When we get these applications, Rob has a pretty good idea, and I think licensing staff does. Is this a Title Act only state, or is this a equivalent higher practice level state license? So
okay.
When we get the applications, most likely they'll go to the board, and the person will have to provide documentation, and we will do research on the state laws for the board to determine whether or not it's at the same level. So it's not just going to get shot.
When you do your research, do you make recommendations?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And we consult Scott as well, because, you know, if you deny somebody a license, you have to have a good reason to do that, because they have appeal rights, and
right.
You know, they can come in and demonstrate that they're capable and qualified, and we don't want to be doing the wrong thing. You know, we want to give everybody an opportunity to prove they're capable and qualified, so we want to make sure everything is copacetic.
Well, I think, you know, from the board standpoint of not looking at every single one of these applications that comes in, would be to do a little research on what states are, we know, have basically the same requirements,
right.
And those are automatic.
Right.
You know, so, you know, Colorado has basically the same requirements, you just say, Colorado, boom.
Right,
good.
Exactly.
But if it's a weird one, then maybe
you guys will know
until
that.
We decide, we have a comfort level that, okay, you know, now we're okay with these.
Right.
Yeah.
And like I said, Rob's done the research for us, so I think we're in good
shape. So out of the 32, you should know
right.
These are basically the same. okay. And these are iffy.
And then we'll see if more of these folks end up in our enforcement queue, you know,
yeah,
as a result.
Keep track of that. And I think the Title Act thing, I mean, they should have to be, I don't know if it says it in the law, but it has to be regulated profession, right, in the states. Is that how we're going to interpret it?
It's up to the board.
So.
They'll decide on this meeting.
Okay.
Fun news.
So there'll be more for you after the board's looked at it and done their formal interpretation. Then we can put something together and provide it.
Did you have some?
I did. Just a couple things. So this essentially, if you look at the big picture, it kind of supersedes the bill that we were running before because it's more widespread, if you will.
And the governor vetoed our bill because he
Right, because of this.
One.
Now, I'm a little concerned with terms like comparable where it's so subjective.
Right.
But what level of latitude does the BTR have on a case-by-case basis?
I think that's
Fair amount?
Key, case-by-case basis. So, you know, when we bring these cases before the board, they'll know, like Jason said, is it comparably licensed Practice Act state? Is it, you know, has the person been licensed there in good standing, you know?
Okay.
That sort of thing.
Because, and I realize this document is not the law, but the way I read this, and I may be missing something on there, if I'm in North Dakota and say North Dakota does not have licensing, but the guy's an ASHI member, so he's ASHI certified, he took the NHIE, and so it says certified, he's not licensed, but he's certified by a professional.
Not
so
ASHI. No, it has to be by a state.
Okay.
Right.
Because that's
so he would not qualify.
In another state. He's certified in a state, but it's just
not by the state
of North Dakota.
That's what we were just talking about. Are they regulated by the state?
Okay, so they must be regulated.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
So then how do we deal with pools and spas then?
That's a good question.
So didn't we? Don't we have a separate education module for pools and spas that we could invoke?
We added 4 hours to the required education.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The truth is, doing pools and spas is optional.
Right.
No, I realize that.
So to require someone coming in from another state to show experience in pools and spas, he's got the option of denying to do pools and spas on every job he does.
True statement.
So I'm not sure that whether or not it would be wise for us to do that.
Is this an advisory document where we could...
This is our own interpretation for our website.
Internal.
We could say, you know, if you do not have experience with pools and spas the way the state, you know, to make it clear that it's not required that you do those, but if you do, it's got to comply with this extra set of standards because they may not even look at that. It's another document.
I think it's something that staff should actually have on their list when an application comes in to check to see if this applicant is familiar with pools and spas, and if not, then we have to educate.
So we could put that on the application, a section that says Arizona certification will allow you to do pools and spas, but we advise you not to do that, something like that.
Unless you're educated.
You know what I mean.
And a lot of the schools will have that module kind of isolated so they don't have to take or pay for it in a long course, they could do the short.
Yeah, and that's what I was hoping, is that if they needed to run them through a school and do a 4 or 5 hour thing in pools and spas to get them up to speed.
Or we can wait until they show up here with a complaint against them.
I was going to say, would that be considered state-specific?
I know you hate that, but that's
really the way it works.
I'm all about being proactive here.
Yeah.
And we don't have the law requirements.
Yeah, but the staff, we make a forest that the staff has trouble finding.
No, I hear you.
We do require pools and spas 4 hour extra education here that we can impose the education requirement. Right.
Yeah, it's just a recommendation. I would do it softly as a recommendation and then guide them to that separate document, because if they look at the standards, it's like it's silent on pools
and spas. Maybe you can word it, you know, since the state of Arizona has numerous houses with in-ground pools and spas, we advise you to take, or we suggest, that you may want to take a course on pools and spas if you're going to be doing home inspections in the state. So that's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
So basically telling them maybe you should do this.
So maybe there's another way. If
call
they
Peter Lee.
Don't you must have a chit chat with
if
Peter.
If
they don't do pools and spas no experience with pools and spas, there could be a case made that they don't they're not comparable to us. Okay? And therefore, when it comes to the board to review their application, couldn't the board tell them they need to take a four-hour course on pools and spas at that point?
That's what the board has to talk about at the next meeting. Mm-hmm. So one of you may want to come to the next meeting for that discussion.
Yeah. But here's a caveat, though. The governor's office has been hearing complaints from other reg boards, specifically medically related boards like physical therapy, that the practice of physical therapy here requires numerous extra things than it might in another state. I don't know why, and I don't know what those specifics are, but the governor's office is pretty adamant that they don't care what our additional licensing requirements are. They want these people to get licensed, and the justifications boards have, they see as onerous and restrictive. So.
Well, we don't have to be restrictive. We can just say, here's your license as soon as you show us you have 4 hours of pool training. Very simple.
I bet that a lot of that won't fly, but since it's not a combined document, I think that's really where the fear factor is for me anyway, is that if they ignore that second document, you guys might as well brace for trouble, you know.
Yeah, can I make a comment
on
this?
Go ahead.
Is it possible to have two separate certifications, one for home inspector, one for pool inspector?
No.
Well, that solves that problem.
It would, but it's
too messy.
Need to go through the legislature.
It's got to go through statute and then rules and then GERC and
So I have an additional
4 years from now maybe.
I have an additional question. Just as you're doing reviews of other states, like the best repository I've ever seen for that information is ASHI.
Okay.
But it's not always accurate. In fact, I researched what they had on Arizona and ended up having to call them to straighten it out because they had old information. So I just wonder, as you analyze these individual states, you'll go to that state's board.
That's what Rob has done. Yeah,
okay.
Like Maine wants to license home inspectors, so they may drop off the list in a year or two, and then somebody else just recently licensed in the last couple years.
Was it Ohio? Ohio just
might have been Ohio.
Ohio just
there's one we had to change on this.
Yeah.
Well, there's an Ohio.
Ohio's on the unlicensed list.
I think they probably don't have their rules up
somebody
and running.
Somebody might have taken one off, but
I think they just met. Their rules committee just met.
I've been referencing three different sites, like just to double check because some of them were like they said Arizona was wrong, and then.
Yeah, I would not go to ASHI. I mean, they do a great job, and it's super close. But boy, you know, there could be.
Well, another and maybe better resource is the examination board. They have a legislative committee that tracks this, and they may be actually a little closer on boots to the ground as far as the latest and greatest on legislative activity. The ASHI legislative committee has not been as active of late, but the exam board is all over it.
Or the state. The state's always been.
Yeah, so, and I've got contacts to the executive director on the exam board, of course, if anybody needs that, as far as researching any states.
Great.
That couldn't hurt, yeah. I'll reach out to you to get that information.
Yeah.
Well, and FYI, gentlemen, this statute comes from the Institute for Justice, so they're very proud, and so is Mr. Ducey, that it passed here first. So, you know, they host summer camp in Colorado Springs every year where they invite legislators from around the country. So this may be touted up there as a model for other states to adopt. I don't know that they were pleased with the residency requirement that I think Mr. Peterson, who was the bill's sponsor here, added, but it may end up going national, so.
And you'll track folks' complaint histories from here on out?
Yes, okay. Yes. So we'll see, you know, what we do initially is register people, and then when complaints come in, we'll
track
make note
separately.
Of whether they were an initial applicant here who met all our requirements, or if they came in under 2569. I think it'll be interesting to see if we do end up seeing more enforcement actions. But we may see in the first year maybe an application a month. I don't know that we'll see a lot. So we'll track it and let you guys know how many applications we see under 2569.
Is the BTR still involved with Arello at all, the Association for Real Estate Regulatory Licensure Group? Okay.
No.
Because I know that we're initially, when we're getting our licensing rolling and getting hints and tips from them. Okay. Just curious.
Yeah, no, as far as I'm aware.
And just as a heads up, if we can keep this on the agenda for next meeting.
Sure.
Just so we all recall them.
Yeah.
Does anybody look like they can be there on the 27th?
Oh. Which one?
I mean, you don't have to be there.
I think it'd be a good idea.
Because we do have Mr. Madison.
That's true.
But he comes every month. He's dedicated.
What loyalty.
I know.
He is. We're very proud of him.
Every month.
We're very proud of him. Some months he's nicer than other months.
Yeah, I'm getting more surly.
He was crazy at the last meeting.
He lives up to his nickname of J-Mad.
Yeah.
You know, you would think the main thing that we're looking for from the BTR board is to maintain the flexibility on making a call at any point in time, as opposed to you can't do this and you can't do that. Just allow the BTR to make a call, especially when the dust is settling on this law.
Right. And the good thing about meeting with the committee before the board is you're going to have all the same faces. Scott will be there, Patty and me, J-Man, Rob, Kurt. So we're all going to make sure that the board is consistent and hopefully does the best it can.
Super. Thank you.
And if you're available.
Yeah.
Powerful dude.
Okay.
Spokesperson. All right. Thank you very much. Anything else on that?
No. Unless you have other questions. Here.
Okay, moving on. Our next agenda item is 5B, and it's vendor preferred programs. I don't know what this is. This might be the one.
Yeah, two of these items are my agenda items. I wanted some clarification on vendor preferred programs because I've read the opinion that we're not allowed to participate in them, but I know for a fact that many home inspectors do. So I'd like to know a little bit more about primarily why we're restricted from participating in preferred vendor programs and how it's enforced.
That is pretty consistent across the country and in regulatory language that I think it's the conflict of interest with both the real estate community and with the repair of what we're inspecting areas. So those are the two restrictions we tend to have in our rules.
But it's happening all over town.
So there are some that are clear cut and there's gray and then there's clearly not a violation type stuff in my mind. So they're all going to have to be case by case matters that would have to be tested through a complaint process. That's like, I would love it. My desire would be where you bring it to this committee or the board and you say, is this okay or not? And it's like, you know, it's not like that. The board does not advise on what exists out there, and it doesn't control the real estate community, so they can give proposals to home inspectors and entice them with programs that are in violation. Clearly, they can do that, and we don't have any control over them. You know what? Actually, that's a very good question.
So essentially, what that means is, as long as you don't get caught, you can participate in these programs.
Well, would it?
That's life, isn't it? But let me add this: the preferred vendor program, Nick, is simply that you don't want to be get caught paying or receiving indirectly or directly anything from anybody.
So the emphasis on is you don't want to get caught.
Well, this is my point. The realtors and all sorts of alarm companies, all sorts of people will actually, like David said, entice you into their programs. And the way that you know whether they're legal or not legal is, number one, whether you're paying for it, all right? Number two, that other people who don't pay for it can't get in, okay? The best way to look at it is like a telephone book. Anybody can get into the telephone book if they pay. This is not a preferred vendor program. But the minute that this program restricts other people from getting in, okay? Then it becomes a preferred vendor program. And what you're in fact doing is you're paying them to put your name out there and thus getting the benefit of their work. And that would come to this desk if someone wanted to file a complaint. And we would beat that up on an individual basis to see whether or not it meets the standard or not. All right? It's very hard to stop these people from doing this unless we put a police force out there and start tracking them all down. So we work on complaints only. So if you see somebody who's participating in a preferred vendor program that you question, the easiest way to put it to bed, in essence, is to file a complaint against them for that specific reason. That's the only way that we can really track them. Now, we know they're doing this.
The proof would be then that I would have to produce a contract that person engaged in the preferred vendor.
I don't know that you'd need a contract for the complaint, but you would need to detail what the issue is, right?
You could pull in the brochure that their name is on as proof. You know, I mean, the realtors or whoever is doing this would have a form they're handing out.
Right. I mean, you can go online and Google preferred vendor programs, and all kinds of people's names pop up.
Yeah, but who has the time for that? So, in essence, they're doing it, and we know they're doing it. We know it's illegal, and we don't have the manpower to chase them down.
But if a complaint was brought up, then it would be Doug's job and his staff's job to investigate the complaint.
Right.
Just like we investigate unlicensed practice of architecture. You know, someone's using, hey, I'm an architect, and the complaint will come in, hey, this guy says he's an architect, and they'll do their due diligence and look at all of it, look at their website, and look at other marketing materials and say, okay, yes, you are, or no, you're not.
Right. Well,
what constitutes proof?
Well, that would be up to the investigators to see.
Okay.
And
what kind of proof would you...
Doug, what constitutes proof?
Well, I mean, we need evidence that the violations occur, so things like contracts.
Yeah,
is a very strong piece of evidence.
But you're not going to get a contract, right? I'm not going to be able to walk into a real estate agent's office and say, can I have a contract for your preferred vendor program that I think somebody's participating in? That's not going to happen, right?
My experience is no, that's not likely to happen.
Unless you subpoenaed them, if you had to.
Well, but in some cases, the home buyer provides the documentation because their issue may have been they didn't like what the home inspector's report said or felt it was missing, and they'll provide the board with copies, and almost always on there, if there's a preferred vendor program, they will be listed. Mm-hmm. I've seen that kind of evidence in the past, but
there are vendor programs that list home inspectors, and it's an exclusive list.
Right. Mm-hmm.
These guys are on it. Everybody else is not on it, so it meets your standard.
Right.
Is that enough evidence?
Yes.
To bring a complaint?
That would be.
A complaint, yeah.
Yes, do you agree, Doug?
Of course, that could open the door.
Yeah. So what kind of evidence do you believe could exist? You said you don't get your contract?
Yeah, you can go, well, you're not going to get a contract, but you can find preferred vendor programs for different real estate companies, and it'll have a list of 3 or 4 or 5 home inspectors on it, and that's it. And if I go to that office and I say I'd like to be on your preferred vendor list, or I would like to leave my brochures in your office, they'll say, no, I'm sorry, we have a preferred group of home inspectors and you're not welcome here.
Right, but wouldn't this only be a violation if the home inspectors had to pay to be on the
list?
That's
exactly right.
Because if I'm a realtor and I only like your three companies, I could put your three companies on my website.
And that's almost always the case.
There's nothing illegal about that. Now, if I said, okay, give me $1,000 and I'll put you on the list.
It's almost always compensation.
What Peter said was a bit confusing, like there has to be open to everybody. It almost never is. The real estate companies don't want 50 home inspection companies on a list.
They want a certain amount of vetting.
But it's also up to the individual homeowner always has...
Always.
They can always pick whoever they want.
Right.
You know, if I'm using ABC Realty and you three are on the list and I don't like you three and I pick Kirk to do it, that's always my choice.
Right. Now, the realtor may try to talk you out of it.
Right. You know, but that's just, I mean, you know, when someone calls me for a referral for something, I mean, I have a list of people that... it's like, okay, you know, but they don't pay me to be on, you know, it's just, I have...
We're talking about preferred vendors list that where the inspectors are paid to be on that list, are paying to be on that list.
Right.
Right, and that's a violation.
That excludes other inspectors
right.
from being on that list.
Right.
That's right.
It's happening all over the place.
Right, and that would be a violation if they have to pay.
Right.
Okay.
Now, but once again, if it was a company that didn't have to pay, and you came in and said, I want to be on your list, and I said, well, it's my company, I don't have to put you on my list.
Oh, right.
Then, you know, that's business.
What happens. The way it manifests itself in the field is if I walk into a real estate office with a handful of brochures and say, can I leave my brochures for your agents to refer me to their customers? And they say, no, we have three inspectors only that we refer our business to. Period.
Right, but that would be a business decision. Now,
yeah, that
if you went in and said, I want to leave my brochures, and they said, okay, fill out this form and give us $1,000 and you can leave your brochures, that would be a violation.
Right.
And that's the crux
of it.
And
that's
right
what's
there.
Happening, Jason.
Right.
It happens.
Yeah.
Right.
And very well may, but there's a difference between getting paid, having to pay to do it, and making a business decision. Because,
right.
you know, any company can make any business decision they want.
Absolutely.
But they can't extort, I would say they can't extort money out of you. That's how I look at it. They can't extort money out of you to be, you know, part of their pay-to-play program.
Yeah.
I mean, if you know somebody who can testify that they were told by a real estate that you have to pay them to be on their list, you know, we could open a complaint with that because we have a witness.
What about if you had a brochure or some documentation that listed a group of home inspectors that excluded everyone else? Would that be enough to start a complaint?
They have to pay. You see, like Jason was saying, you can have.
So what you have to have is you have to have proof that a transaction is taking place, and that's what you can't ever get proof of.
Well,
unless
maybe
you ask the inspector face to face. Hey, Rob, are you paying so and so to be on this list? Yes or no?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so right. every once in a while, like I turned one in to you recently. And I had the contract. Somebody sent me the contract. I put it in anonymously to go and all that. I'm not sure what happened with it. But anyway, I do have a few contracts, and I get them that people will send to me or whatever. But then I know of exact ways that they're getting around it and their method, and we'd have to go into executive session. I wouldn't want to discuss it openly, but... You know, it'd be a legal matter. I mean, I know how they can get past all this, and they are. And so it just depends how far you want to attack this. But I also wonder, is there anything that is a violation with regard to, I always thought that it should be in every state agency's requirements that you cannot entice another licensed practitioner to violate their board rules. Does that somehow exist in statute? Like
in rules.
Or are you talking about for the Board
like,
of Real Estate?
Yeah, like...
I have no idea if they have any requirement.
Right. It would be entity by entity?
I have contacted the Department of Real Estate over this issue because it does come up fairly regularly, and they, in my opinion, need to step up and start telling the realtors to stop this because... It does encourage violations of our practice act.
Right.
You know, we have the statute and the rules, which clearly say that's not lawful to do as a certified home inspector. But we see complaints almost every month.
Well, and as David mentioned, the way it's happening is they're couching it in different verbiage, different expressions of different programs that they're participating in.
Even in different
renominations. It's all semantics to get around the fact that we're paying to be on the list and keep everybody else
right.
off the list.
And the committee
and
is actually
happening.
Right. The committee deals with it almost every year where they look at the rule and say, what other term are they now using and should we add that to the list?
Mm-hmm.
But there's still, I know of an exact way where they can get around it, and I think it's ironclad, you know, so all that, I'm not going to share it, because we're being recorded, you know, then it opens it up to people to utilize it. It's just, it's so tough, it's case by case.
But if some guys are utilizing it, why isn't it open to all of us to utilize? If you're doing it, why not share it with all of us? So we can all...
No, it's another practice by some... Like, I see a lot of them, too, where they're trying to get me to participate, and some are, like, shifting money to this other organization, and then it comes back to these folks, and it's like, wow, that is so radical. And then other ones are kind of just involving normal practices that realtors do that are really just normal business, like events that they hold and this and that.
Or pay for my brochures, or pay for the printing of this, pay for the printing of that.
Pay for a luncheon.
Yeah, I mean, it goes on and on where... It's just such a nightmare to deal with. It truly is.
I'm going to continue to see if Department of Real Estate will need to talk about this.
Yeah.
Because if it's this big of a problem, then we need their help. They need to start educating their licensees about home inspector investigations and the requirements we have to make sure this doesn't happen. They haven't been amazingly friendly. But I'm happy to keep calling them and see if I can.
I wonder if we really wanted to open up this can of worms, maybe we should get the home inspectors in the industry to start policing themselves, and send out through the associations possibly for the home inspectors to be aware that this is going on and to please contact the board. In the event that it does.
We do periodically run the same article that I think Randy wrote about preferred vendors or
you did it the last time I requested it.
Mm-hmm.
You sent it out. I saw it. It came across, and it's out there.
It is out there, but we can't make people read it, and we can't make people comply.
No, but in these associations, they get a whole mess of home inspectors together, and some of them are doing it and some of them are not, and some of them that are starving and some of them are living like kings, and so you can really get a war going in that room if in fact you let them know that they have recourse for that.
Okay.
You know?
Well, and I know Rob is going to schools, at least two of them, mm-hmm. where he talks to candidates for licensure, and he adds that to the discussion of you can't do this, right, Rob?
You got to register a firm. We give them a little watch out for this when you get in there. I don't know how it helps yet, but
Well, maybe a little twist on that and saying watch out for the guy that's doing it and turn him in. I mean,
but that's my point. How do you turn him in?
You just file a complaint.
Right.
Okay, and I bring it to Doug, and Doug says, what's your proof?
No, Doug, you can file it anonymously.
Okay, so it still goes to Doug.
Doug hates that.
Right, so I would never file it anonymously. If I file a complaint against XYZ company mm-hmm. that they're participating in this program, mm-hmm. Doug gets it and he says, what's your proof, Nick? Well, it's on this brochure. And I walk in there and they won't let me put my brochures in there because these three guys are paying to be there. I don't
question,
have physical
Doug,
proof.
Do you need proof? You don't need proof. Well, but if somebody opens up a complaint,
some basis, some foundation for the complaint.
Well, I understand that, but if say for instance, Nick knows that this person is doing that, and he files a complaint, are you going to ignore the complaint?
My question, Nick, is, are you willing to be a witness?
Well,
no, I don't want to get involved.
Okay, no, sure, I'll be a witness. Well,
it makes it very difficult to do.
But what do you do with it at that point? Do you throw it away? Do you file it? Do you actually research it? What do you do? The complaint is actually on the books by that time, is it not?
It's not on the books. I get phone calls.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what about this preferred vendor program? I think, I suspect that somebody's doing it. No names. Okay, well, you can file a complaint.
Mm-hmm.
If you have information that could be considered evidence for the board,
mm-hmm.
willing to provide that information? Or are you willing to be a witness and testify if need be?
Mm-hmm.
100% of the time, the answer is no. I'm not willing to get involved.
Okay. Well, I would be willing to get involved. If I think somebody's
just like
participating in a preferred vendor program, I think
it sounds like we're working out in Mary.
And that makes your complaint stronger.
I think Peter got the score. Okay,
so if I bring that complaint to Doug,
but go look at it.
This is happening here, and here's the evidence that I have. It's circumstantial. I don't have a signed agreement that says XYZ company is going to pay XYZ company. can we please interview this guy and just ask him face to face?
Yeah, I mean, if you get something that establishes that, there's, you know, a violation may have occurred and it didn't, something to, some foundation.
It's happening a lot, and it's excluding a lot of companies.
I know it's happened a lot, but my experience is nobody wants to really come forward and be a complainant or be a witness.
I think it is happening a lot. It's prevalent, and both the brokers and the designated brokers are trying to have more and more control over the transaction, and they do that by making sure that there's a limited number of inspectors that get referred. And I think it's, I was just looking, I think it's Realty One. Not to name names, but they're ones where you, I don't think you can put a brochure in there unless you're on their list.
Well, I'll so give you an example, Paul. I was approached by HomeSmart to be part of their preferred vendor program for $1,500 a month.
Right.
Ooh, and it,
oh, yeah. And in addition to that, they're going to have two other inspectors in that program.
That's a lot of inspections.
Paying that kind of money. And then they hit you up for this event, hit you up for this event, this event, and it gets very expensive.
Oh, it does.
But it's kind of an exclusive little deal there. And it's happening all over the
place. Yeah, and I mean, there's an inspector education component of this, but I would love to be able to build a case to the Realty Ones or the Home Smarts, go back to the ADRA and say, come on, you know, clean up your act, do something about this because it's out there. And it's not getting less, it's getting more.
Right. And it's very exclusionary, and it keeps a lot of new, young, good inspectors, you know, off the field.
If a complaint was put in to the BTR, would it have to be on a registrant or could it be on a real estate entity?
No.
Registrant.
Has to be a registrant.
Now, we currently have one looking at formal hearing. The complaint notice of hearing has been sent out. There's a formal hearing scheduled, and it involves a Realty One preferred vendor. Mm,
that's probably
group. And I don't know how it's going to play out, but the hearing is October.
I believe it's in October.
And we may have a settlement conference. So the complaint is public record. Obviously, any settlement we have would be public record as well. And we could send that over to Department of Real Estate as an example of, you know, the problem that we're seeing. And it would be more compelling than me just calling and saying, I want to talk to you about this because, you know, the AG's office is involved, and if it goes to formal hearing, it will.
Well, an ADRE has a formal complaint process, I'm sure.
They do, for realtors.
That we could follow, right? I mean, is that just for realtors?
Yes.
Or,
okay. But I don't know if it's a violation of their Practice Act to establish programs like this.
No.
Right. Well, it's probably not because it's prevalent and brokers are aware of it. I mean, everybody's aware of it.
But sometimes
it seems
buried.
Like we're the only people that don't do anything about it.
Sometimes it's buried in rules. Like,
well, no, it seems like. Yeah.
Like sometimes things are in rule that you can use as a basis. Mm-hmm. Like we're also have to comply with the rules of all registrants of this board.
Mm-hmm.
Most home inspectors don't know that. They just know their individual requirements. But actually, you got to read the whole set of rules. So there might be something in the real estate department rules.
Yeah. But
well, I know that real estate brokers tend to be chickens because they like to avoid lawsuits. Mm-hmm. And I think that if we put it in those terms to them, that look, you're opening yourself up to a lawsuit when your real estate agents are engaging in this kind of behavior with home inspectors. I think it's essentially collusion.
It's just tough because they can have their own requirements. Like this state allows for a bond or it allows for E&O. Maybe I'm the real estate owner and I would not use somebody that only has a bond. So I get to carve out those people right away. They get to do whatever they want realistically. I mean, I've had them say, you know, we're only going to pick the ones that we know their levels of insurance. You know, they can put all these mandates on them that are outside in their decisions.
That's their prerogative.
Yeah.
What about the people that are just paying to be on preferred vendor programs? That's happening. Period. And they're paying lots of different ways. but it's still money comes out of this entity and goes into that entity. Same thing.
But there are activities between the two businesses that, like attendance at an event, a booth at a conference.
Sponsorships.
So sponsorships of...
Is that allowed?
Yeah, I think that's normal business.
I believe it is, yeah.
I don't think that's allowed by our rules, is it?
Yeah, there's no prohibition on sponsoring or normal business activities. It's not that imposing. The governor would flip out if we did, probably.
Maybe I could provide the committee a little bit more focus with regards to this. If you refer back to the actual, the specific rule for home inspectors, it's that they shall not pay directly or indirectly in part or in full a commission or compensation as a referral or finder's fee, a real estate company, real estate office, real estate broker, salesperson, et cetera, in order to obtain referrals for home inspection business. So that's, you know, how that's defined by the board in proceeding with any complaint would be how the board looks at it in terms of sponsorships and all that. I couldn't speak directly to that, but it's the rule specifically references and includes but is not limited to participation in pay-to-play programs by any name, preferred vendor, approved vendor, marketing partner, marketing services agreement. The big part under this would be the establishment of evidence regarding pay directly or indirectly in full or in part commission or compensation, which certainly from a legal standpoint, and this isn't advice so much as specifically just kind of defining the rule a little bit, the big issue would come down to establishing pay and establishing a connection between the pay and the specific referral. So that's probably where issues like sponsorships begin to fall off, things like that. But it would be up to the board to determine any given complaint situation whether something specifically fell under this rule. But it is pretty targeted.
Okay. Thank you.
I wanted to say, too, this last... maybe it's the case that you put forward, but they had a case last month, and it was Capital One, I think, was the realtor. You guys had looked at it, and it was dismissed. And if I recall correctly, it's because the contract was, it wasn't, what was it, like a draft. I don't think it was signed.
It was redacted.
It was redacted.
Maybe the important information that we could follow up on is redacted.
Oh, okay. But it was dismissed, and as Mr. Buchanan's probably pointing out, is that that's the proof, and this last case was dismissed based off of this document, pretty much. At least that's how I look at it.
So the policy statement is more aligned, it seems, with paying a fee or compensation in order to obtain an inspection.
Well, this isn't the policy statement. This is the
rule. Oh, the rule, right. Right. That seems like it's a vast minority of what could happen. More often is you are paying a fee for the visibility of the real estate professional.
Right.
To get up in front of them, to be able to send them an email, to be able to be, you know, to be able to broadcast your benefits to them. It's almost never that collecting a fee so I can get this inspection tomorrow morning. That almost never happens.
That would be up to the board to determine in an individual case whether or not that rose to the level of a violation of this rule.
And at some point we may need to determine that, because that's what we keep coming up against, is the exclusive arrangement for payment or compensation has to do with the level of exclusivity for access to the real estate professional. Because if I can't put my brochures in the Realty One office, then that's exactly what's going on. And so I'd like to see this at some point propagated back to having somebody render an opinion on it. You know, is it in violation or is it not? Because that's the majority of these programs, is the exclusivity for visibility.
Yeah, and I think the argument with that is if you're a homeowner, you have the option of picking anybody you want. You know, I know that, you know, the realtor can say, here's three.
Right. Oh, yeah.
But you always have the option of going to the phone book and looking it up. I mean,
right.
I've sent a couple over to David because, you know, they're, you know, like niece and stuff, and their cousin, and you know, their realtor's like, oh, use one of these. And, you know, she calls me and I go, don't use one that they tell you to use. That's dumb, you know. Pick someone on your own, you know, because, and I know homeowners don't do that. They trust their realtors, which they shouldn't. But, I mean, they really shouldn't.
But the realtors are a statutory agent, I believe, as part of the contract. Last I knew, they're technically a statutory agent. So they're on behalf, they're working on behalf of their buyer or seller, whoever they have the agreement.
They are, but they can't force a home buyer to...
No, they can't, absolutely. But they do have a level of responsibility on proper representation of their client.
They do, but... You know, I mean, someone tells me, hey, you know, it's for my benefit, not the realtor's benefit. I mean, right. The realtor's benefit is they're getting money if the sale goes through. They're not advocating for the house. They're advocating for this commission.
Right.
That's the way I look at it. So, you know, a homeowner should, you know, they don't, but they should, you know, think about, okay, who's benefiting from this? You know, the homeowner needs an advocate for the house, not an advocate for anything else.
I'd like to see us go to the ADRA.
Paul, if I could just address one thing that you said.
Yeah.
When you were talking to Jason, I said something about the board coming down and issuing some kind of an opinion regarding whether this practice. The issue with that is the board will never be able to do that. The board will only be able to look at a complaint that comes before it,
right,
with the individual characteristics of that. They can't say that any other case might constitute a violation.
Right. Well, at some point we may have to push this to force somebody to render an opinion.
I don't think so. I think that what is this, 2019? This is the 19th year that I sat through this conversation. And it always, I'm telling you, it always comes down to we need a complaint, we need evidence. Okay, and then we can follow through on an individual basis. I don't think anything is ever going to change. We just came back to that with Mr. Donald. It has to be done on a complaint. It has to be addressed by the board. The board will give their ruling on an individual basis. And I can't wait till 2020.
Well, and here's something we can do. I think we can use our newsletter as a good tool, and if the case that's currently set for formal hearing results in some form of discipline, whether by consent or through the formal hearing process, we can write up a summary of that case, actual case, and put it in the newsletter as an example of, you know, what can happen if you take part in these programs.
That's a good idea. So people can read it and be like, uh-oh. And then maybe it's, you know, your meetings that you have, you know, that someone could get up and speak and say, look, this is actually what happened. And if you don't want this to happen to you, maybe you better think twice about this stuff.
Are we allowed to do that?
Yeah,
I mean, it's public.
Oh, it becomes public knowledge after there's been a judgment? Okay, good. I like that idea.
So you can just get up in front and say, look, this is happening, but this is what... This should,
right.
Do what you want, but there's consequences to your actions.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And this is what they are. And, you know, some people might say, oh, well, you know, I make this much money doing it, I'll just take the chance.
Right.
But
we're going to do that in the next newsletter with an example, an engineering example, where we see a lot of unlicensed people stealing engineers' stamps and seals and applying them illegally to drawings, deceiving the public.
Wow.
So. The board took discipline, and then we sent it to the AG's office for a criminal prosecution, and there was an indictment and a conviction.
Wow.
So we're putting that article in our newsletter to give people pause. Of course, we can't make people read, but if they do, maybe they'll think twice about, you know, doing that, or for the engineers who look at it, being really careful about what they do, you know, affix their stamps to, and, you know, the circumstances are out there for people to take advantage or try to skirt the law, and, you know, we just have to provide notice that it's not the right thing to do.
I do think it is the responsibility of the BTR and ideally this committee to be clear with our registrants, all 880 of them or however many we have, this is acceptable. This is not. We have enough examples out there. I just think we need to be clear because it's a very gray area right now.
Yeah, and if there are ways to get around it, then let's just say, which exactly right, this, you can do this, but you can't do that.
Right. Where's the line drawn?
You can do a sponsorship for a golf tournament, but you can't pay for someone's brochures. Or you can't write them a check every month to be on that list.
Boy, that's all so messy. It is messy.
Well, that's my point. That's why I'm bringing it up.
But it's too, the best way to police it is we've got to get a rule at the, we've got to hang on a rule at the real estate department that we're saying, you're violating this.
You guys are, they don't care that they're violating.
Well, then, I've been here all 19 years as well. You know, if we could have crushed it, we'd have crushed it.
It's like what Peter said. You have to have a
complaint.
You have to have a complaint. Something has to resolve from it. It has to become public knowledge in the home inspector community. Do it, but you're at your own peril, because this is what can happen to you. And then, you know,
and put it up on a billboard.
If someone wants to break the law, they have the right to break the law. They just have to accept the punishment if they get caught. I mean, that's how society works. I mean, you can go and steal something from the store every day if you want to.
But
you know what will happen if you get caught.
But, you know, we thank you for bringing this to the table again, because it's important, and it's happening out there, and it's widespread. And it is something we need to keep on our radar, for sure. Thank you.
Okay.
Before you move on, it's the gentleman who's getting hurt by this that needs to follow through on it. You know what I'm saying? You're concerned with the young guys, the new guys, these type of people. These are the guys I would talk to and tell them, if you find this happening, these are hurting you, okay? Do something about it. Okay? Because none of us really have
the time. Well, that's hard to demonstrate, Peter. It's hard to demonstrate if you're paying to be on this list and I can't get on that list, mm-hmm. that it's costing your business.
Right.
There's no direct relationship there. Mm-hmm. My point is, if it's a rule, we should enforce it. Mm-hmm. If we're not going to enforce it, or it's unenforceable, then it shouldn't be a rule. Right? It's like having standards that we enforce or don't enforce. If we don't enforce them as written, we don't have standards.
Yeah, but we also don't mm-hmm. enforce the standards until there's a complaint. That's the door opener.
No, but the standards are there to give us a guideline, mm-hmm. right, of what's right and what's wrong.
Yes, and we do have a rule to give us that guideline, too. Mr. Donald just read it to us. It's always a complaint. It's sad, but it is.
Okay. Very good. That was 5B. And now we're on to 5C, which is possible conflicts between home inspector standards and report checklist. And that came from, we have a document on that.
So actually having how this came up is we've heard from, periodically we hear from folks that this is the thing they've been on, which applies, the checklist or the standard. So I went back and I went through the standard and I went through the checklist and I
Fun.
Found the spots where we might have some confusion.
And just so you know, I went through after Patty did, and
wow.
so did Todd. So.
Wow.
yeah.
Good.
So, is coming here and then going to the board, because the board has to interpret the law, and essentially the checklist is kind of an interpretation of the law. So it's the board that needs to interpret the law and say yay or nay to what's on the checklist. But of course, you guys need, you're the experts, so they need to know what you're thinking about what I found.
Well, the checklist was reviewed by the board many, many years ago. And otherwise we couldn't have used it.
Right.
All right. But these items here, Nick, are these all your items or is this from staff?
This is what we found.
No. The only item that I had a contention with, mm-hmm. well, actually there's a couple of them, but the disclaimer down here on the checklist supplement, it says that to the extent that there's any conflict between the guidelines and the checklist, the standards will prevail, will govern.
Right.
It says items present but not inspected must be clarified as to why they were not inspected, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
But then over here on page 2, on item 10, it says on roof ceiling structure, it is not acceptable to describe the condition of the roof and ceiling as not visible. Now, this is unenforceable. You referred me to the full board for disciplinary action for this very item on a case. couple of months ago. It took me about 4 minutes to explain to the full board why this doesn't make any sense, and they dismissed it. So I think this needs to be changed. And it needs to be changed to comport with the standards which say that any items that were designated for inspection that were not inspected and a reason why they were not inspected. If I can't see an attic structure, a roof structure, I'm not going to comment on it. And neither are my four other inspectors, because it doesn't make any sense. If you can't see it, you can't comment on it. Clearly the standards say that's applicable. The guidelines say that's okay. But then this particular item says that it's not okay.
Yeah.
I understand your dilemma. If I was at the board, we would have had a more of an argument.
We did have an argument.
We have
a
flat roof, no attic. So what you say is that because I can't see the roof rafters, I can get away without commenting on the structure of the roof.
That's not correct.
Okay.
It's not a matter of getting away with anything. It's accuracy.
Okay, then I cannot.
I cannot see the roof structure, which is a substantial structure, I don't think it's safe to comment on it. And I'll tell you why.
Mm-hmm.
If there's damage to that roof that I can't see, in that substantial structure, not like a wall structure that's 3.5 inches or 5.5 inches, because we have to guess about that too. We can't see the wall studs, but I can look at this side and I can look at that side and I can tell that that wall's in pretty good shape. But if that roof is 3, 4, 5 feet high and I can't see it, there can be damage in there. It doesn't make sense for us to require this. But if we're going to require it, then I think this group needs to promulgate the language to express that, because I don't know the words to say, I didn't see the roof, but it looks okay from where I was. Right? It doesn't make any sense, Peter.
It's just, why would you advocate for the wall then?
That
you can with the wall. There's no difference if the ceiling sagging and the roof structure sagging.
I have been in roofs where there are trusses that are cut and damaged. There's no evidence of it on the top or the bottom.
Well, it was visible to you, so you're not going to use this in that case, right? You did see it.
It doesn't make any sense. It says here,
you did see it.
Access denied, access restricted. Then over here it says, that's not acceptable. It doesn't make any sense. On this page of the checklist, it says one thing. On this page of the checklist, it says something else. Now, this page comports with the standards, but this page does not. And that's my problem.
So then the wall, your statement that the wall, I can see both sides, I can tell, that's the same as the roof.
No, but
you
it's not.
You're seeing the inside and you're walking the roof, right?
Right. I'm seeing the inside.
What's the difference?
Because it's a more substantial structure.
Thickness is a matter?
Oh, yeah, of course it matters.
So what's the thickness that's where it is determinable and where it's not?
Well, I think in a wall, I will take a chance on it. I think we're safe enough to take a chance on a wall. But a big, substantial attic access that's inaccessible, why would you require us to comment on that?
Because the roof structure can't, failure of a roof structure that's severe can be determined.
No, it can't. Sometimes it can't.
Sure, sometimes it can't. You just put in language.
I've looked in attics where the trusses have been cut out and removed, parts and pieces of them.
Those are visible. You're reporting on that.
Okay, but what if that attic access is not visible? I mean, what if it's inaccessible? What if there's a car parked there and I say, inaccessible, not inspected, inaccessible. I've complied with the standards and I've complied with, that's the standards, I've complied with this page of the checklist. But
yeah,
it still doesn't comply with this page of the checklist. So I think we need to get this page of the checklist and this page of the checklist to agree with each other.
I get the argument. I mean, we've done all this.
I think it's fine to edit, and we want to be sure we're consistent, not just here at the committee, but at the board. So it may be time to revisit some of the language just to, you know, look at it fresh and say, okay, does this make sense? Can we use a better term? There's always time to do
that.
There's
ways to do that. However, if I go into a development that's all Santa Fe houses and none of them have attics, okay, and the builder or the investor hired me to inspect each and every one of them, and I said nothing about the structure of their roofs on 30 houses, do you think they would hire me again? Nick, hear me out.
If you can't see,
I heard you out. Now hear me out. Okay.
It's as simple as that. It doesn't matter what you say or how you say it. If you can't see it, you can't comment on it.
What you can't, you can comment on things that you can't see, and we do this every day of the week. We comment not only on the obvious ones, but we comment on temperature, pressure, relief, discharge lines that 90% are hidden in walls. We comment on everything, and whether we can see it or not. And when you're talking about commenting on a roof that has no attic space, there's two things to comment on. You can comment on components, which you can't see, or you can comment on the overall structure of the roof. And this is what we're asking them to do. Not to comment on the roof rafters, the insulation, the obvious things they can't see, but to tell us whether or not they feel as home inspectors, because they're qualified to tell us this, whether or not that roof seems to be sound to them. Now, they can comment on that with a paragraph or a page of disclaimers, but we do require them to tell us about the structure of the roof, okay? That's why we can't just say, okay, this roof is not visible, therefore I'm not going to make a comment on it. And this falls into play not only in the standards, Nick, but in our rules. I'm not done. In our rule, Article 3, Regulatory Provisions, R4-3301, Rules of Professional Conduct, Point 6, says that the home inspector shall apply the technical knowledge and skill applied by other people doing the same thing in the same place at the same time. The industry has always commented on structures of walls, floors, and roofs since long before we were ever certified. For us to turn around and say that we're going to let home inspectors off the hook because they can't see the components of a roof, to me, is ridiculous. Okay? So, you're going to have to come to terms with the fact that your two pages don't seem to jive in your mind. All right? But they do jive when it comes to doing the proper job in the field. We're here to protect the clients. And my contention is that if you're walking away from roofs simply because they don't have an attic and you can't tell me whether or not they're sagging, ponding, falling, cracking, stained, or any other way to figure out the condition of a roof, then I suggest you're not following our rules other than our standards. Now I'm done. Now you can rebuttal.
Wait a minute. Our actual time period for this activity is November, and that is the time that we revise these. I would like to maybe have us all revisit these key points and make our decision. This is not the time and place to hash this out like in a war. I think the committee itself or some sort of task force to analyze what other states are doing, or however we want to approach this with the advice of perhaps even, you know, AG input on this. In fact, do you have an opinion on this where we're required to inspect it, there's a loophole, and we've gone down the road when there's a complaint and everything that is not visible, you know, there's carpet, so I don't know the condition of this floor structure. Like heck you don't. If it's sagged, you can put all sorts of disclaimers in, but simply because there's carpet. Because otherwise, there is no inspecting of all these. Floor structure, foundation, wall structure, columns, and roof and ceiling structures. Home inspectors will get out of all of those. They simply will learn, you just put not visible, you're out.
What I can say is it's up to the board to determine any specific circumstance, if something constitutes a violation of this, the board would have to make a determination. To use Peter's example of if somebody was applying a technical knowledge and skill applied by other qualified registrants, etc., that's entirely going to be a board decision, and that's going to depend on the composition of the board at any given time.
And that's a good reason to make these the two jive.
Right.
So that you can't look, so members can't look at one and go, okay, or look at another one and go, okay. They need to be in line with each other.
Right.
So if there is discrepancies between the two, those need to be cleaned up.
Yeah, I think the discussion is well placed now if we come back. Like, if you determine you want to look at the checklist again, given what we consider possible discrepancies mm-hmm. and come back in November and make changes, that would, it's timely, you know.
I think it needs to go to the board now so the board knows that these things exist, because they're the ones making the decisions.
It's probably too early to go to the board now, right? We need to see if there are, in fact, discrepancies that require redoing, modifying of the document. That's up to you guys, but it may be a little...
It should be a matter of, they're making decisions, they should know what is being said.
As cases get come before them.
And that's my concern about waiting until November. What if...
Okay.
And I think this list that you guys compiled is just, if we have one of these cases, stick this list in the board packet with it. And then you can see, okay, well, you know, and then we can interpret, and it is case by case on, you know, what it is. But like I said, if you have two different things, then people look at them from different points of view.
Right. I think what the BTR is trying to do with our licensees is, and we had the discussion on columns, I think, in April. You can't just say nothing about columns. You have to say something, and those four words, to the extent observable. So you have to make an attempt to render an opinion to the extent that you could, because you couldn't get in that attic space, which could have all kinds of nasty stuff in there. You can't just not say nothing about it. You have to say something, but to the extent observable. That, I think, is the key. Just as David's example on the flooring, to the extent observable, the flooring structure appears to be, functional. So that, I think, that's what we're trying to strive towards, but it's probably time to see if we need to do some more cleanup on the checklist.
And maybe just provide some suggested verbiage to the inspectors in the field on what to use.
Maybe in the checklist
that could be the basis of a court action. You know, well, the suggested verbiage, I wouldn't advise the board.
Well, we already have it in the checklist, though.
Yeah. That's my point. If you go to court, and if I'm the defendant, and the attorney asks me in a deposition, well, you said here that the attic structure was in satisfactory condition. How much of it did you see? None. How can you make that assessment?
Right, but to Paul's point, it was... To the extent,
that's the easy way. You could go on for a page with all the limitations. That's what we're saying. Just don't bag out of it. Like, as you're in the unique position, Jason, as a structural engineer, advise family members on home purchases, purchase homes yourself. Is it okay to just say, not visible, not visible, not visible, not five times?
Yeah, no. But it would say, you know, like a closed space would be, you know, not visible, but like you said, you walk on it. If you don't fall through the roof, or you feel it bouncy, or you don't see drywall cracks and stuff to the extent that was known. I do it all the time in my profession.
We have to
do it. You know, I look at stuff,
it's
like...
We're saying, you cannot simply say not visible. That's what that statement says.
Yeah, right.
But you can still comment on the overall condition of it from what you can tell, from what you can see.
And we need to make that you can comment on the overall condition of it clear in our checklist.
Right.
Okay, and I'm all for that.
So just reword, but still say that you can't just simply say not visible? Is that what... Okay, if there's another way to say that, I'm all...
Well, now remember, I think my suggestion is, this is going to be on the agenda for the board to learn about this discussion.
Okay.
And, you know, obviously they heard Mr. Buchanan's complaint a couple months back, right?
Right.
It came before. So it's not something they are unfamiliar with. And his was considered case by case, you know, individual circumstances. So what I'm proposing is putting this issue with the checklist and the possible conflicts paperwork on the board agenda. The board will look at it for August. Give you guys the opportunity between now and the next meeting to look over the checklist, look over the possible conflicts, and then when we get together, whether it's November or a meeting even earlier, as long as it's agendized, we can work on cleaning up the checklist to, you know,
sense.
Luke, maybe it's always good fresh eyes look at it and say, this isn't clear, this conflicts, let's make it better.
And I'm sure at the board, that's what we'll do. We'll say, you know, we tasked the home inspector committee to review the checklist and the standards to make sure that they, you know, are
consistent
with each other.
Right. I mean,
and then that gives this committee the direction to proceed and do it.
Right.
I guess I don't have a clear, like, for example, this one's a crux type issue of this. So we try, this is our language to make it clear, to don't simply say not visible, say to the extent visible or whatever.
Right.
Like, we don't want to advise on language, I don't think, unless you guys are going to start doing that.
No, but I'm saying rather than use the term not visible, I actually like what Paul suggested. To the extent not observed, or
to the extent observed.
It was observed,
right.
And then encourage people to be a little more specific. Like Jason said, floor was squishy, saggy, notice cracks.
Did I say squishy?
Yeah. Well, we need to let them know it's not a get out of jail free card.
It's not a structural engineering,
right? That you still have a responsibility to render an opinion,
right.
Right.
To the extent that you could.
Right.
Right.
Something like
and
that.
That's exactly.
And I think,
And that was the whole intent to, when we put in there, you can't say not visible, was for them to actually clarify how they inspected that
Listen,
room.
I respect this 84-item checklist so much that my actual report template is modeled after it.
Uh-huh.
Numerically, no. I mean, down to the 84 items. So if you look through our report, you'll see exactly...
I've seen your report, and it's one of the best I've ever seen. But now, let me tell you this. There are other items on here that I agree with, and I think that we can put them to bed today. For instance, when we're talking about the vegetation grading and drainage patio walks, with their respect to their effect on the condition of the building, okay... I think that we might have had condition of the structure in there. It should be changed to building, where it says condition is not defined in the standards as being the same thing as structure. I think you meant to say that building is not the same thing, is not defined as in the standards as being the same thing as structure. I think we can make these changes. When it comes to sumps, we don't talk about sumps, we talk about sump pumps.
That's a good one.
And we should get sumps on the checklist.
Not only that,
asterisk on the checklist.
Yeah. But,
okay.
But sumps are defined differently than what's the other term for
ejector
pumps.
Right. Waste ejector.
Sewage ejector.
So sewage ejection systems or some verbiage, because some guys are splitting hairs on those two.
We
did an EAC conference a month or so ago where the guy didn't check the pump. The complaint was the pump didn't work, and he said, "Well, it's not in the standards." And I said, "Sure it is. It's a sump pump. It says right here." And he says, "No, a sump pump is just a sump pump. This is an ejector, a sewage ejection pump."
Right.
So we should
that's
have
true.
That
it is.
Right?
Well, then,
different function.
But we're getting into our hands are going to be tied again. The standards don't address grinder pumps. They don't address ejector pumps. They only address sewer waste systems. So I guess
that's part of the way system.
It is, in my opinion. Okay. And so if we want to put the if we want to get that into the checklist, then we're going to sit here about 3 years from now with somebody in your position telling us, well, ejectors are not in the pumps.
Well,
why
no,
are we adjusting?
Put that in parentheses. This includes ejector systems.
This is what
okay,
we're
so
trying.
Let's. Are we attempting to make progress on a decision of partial fixing of this today?
Well, I would like to.
We can. It's agenda.
I would like to.
I know, but, okay.
And then, I mean, come back with another draft at the next meeting, and you can make additional changes, and, you know, you'll have time to think about
okay.
the critical ones
you need
that
a motion.
You need more time.
So. No, I'm just, I want to have a controlled process to just sort
right.
through all of these, because okay. we're just talking about it, and it's going to go endlessly.
Can I make a suggestion?
Sure.
I would suggest maybe Peter and I get together and huddle and go through these possible conflicts as part of the review of the checklist to and then bring some possible changes back to the board at, to this committee at the next meeting, if that works okay.
So
and it'll work okay with the open meeting law if just Peter and I get together, I hope.
So it's not so urgent that... That
no, it's just, I
cannot.
Think in the, yeah, just the board should know the discussion is happening
okay.
because they have to make decisions in the meantime.
Okay.
Just on the not visible part, there's just like three in particular that might provide some guidance.
Yeah.
The standards do allow the term not determined, so
right.
yeah, maybe that's a better term than not visible. It requires the board to include a statement which systems and components were not inspected and the reason they were not inspected, so we could fill it out with that. States that the inspectors are not required to report on any component or system which is not observed. So an observe means it's a visual exam. So that's part of where it needs to be fixed, how to make that work with what's in the standard. The not visible kind of gets booted by the standard, but there's another way to say it in the standard.
Yeah, some of this, these terms are just, it's an interpretation,
yeah.
and it's a subjective
yeah.
interpretation. It depends on what we had for breakfast some days,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
We're not going to change that. We can't change it. We can't say that because it's not visible, we're not going to inspect it. We know that. I mean, the standards do say that you can use the terms not determined and things like that. But that doesn't preclude you. I mean, that generally works on components, not on overall systems, because then we fall back to the rule that's in the board rules.
But we need to find in the standard what supports that.
And we can't change the standards.
Why?
Because
why?
We can't change the standards, because
why?
The standards were put together by the ASHI, Arizona ASHI, and adopted by the board as a document.
You can change them as a board, right?
I don't think so.
Sure we can.
I think for the standards, we'd have to do a rule change.
We can't just go in and change the standards because that document was...
It's part of the law.
Consider it like PDF to put into file.
No, I completely understand, but if our field requirements don't comport with the standards, we're always going to have that conflict.
I understand, and I understand how hard this is, but we've always thought that we've always contended that the home inspector was able to use his own verbiage to clarify the things that couldn't be seen, that and to make the right comments on the stuff that are only partially seen and things like that.
Then what we have to do, I think, in my opinion, is provide the language to do that.
Yeah, and then we have David's problem.
For the inspector to write,
you
well,
know,
give him
if,
the...
If we require a home inspector to comment on things that he can't see, then I think we are required to provide him the language for that.
Well,
you
again, no, we're not.
No,
we're
so
never
say,
going to say, this is how you must say it.
Okay, so what you're going to say is, you must report on something you can't see, but we're not going to tell you how to do
it. So if you're wondering how the condition of this is and you walked around this room, can you tell, generally speaking, the condition of the... Okay,
of
then
I
report that and find a way to do it safely.
We can encourage people to provide qualifying, clarifying rationale for... not observed or whatever they see. And if you want to use Jason's term squishy, then you use that. Or,
right. It's
you
know, solid. It's solid.
Solid.
It's
or,
a solid
or
word. No,
so
I like that word.
We can't recommend that they say those words, solid, squishy, whatever, but I think we can tell them if you're going to say to the extent not observed or observable, then add qualifying language to that. So you're not going to end up at an EAC committee where someone misinterprets that because it wasn't clear, you know.
I mean, I've done that on reports for walking roofs. Felt sound underfoot. I love that.
Mm-hmm.
Felt sound underfoot. I can't tell you,
that's
like you said, that a truss was cut, but when I walked on the roof, I felt sound underfoot. Because, believe me, if you walk on a roof and there's rotted members, you feel them. I mean, you know, you step on one, it bounces down, that doesn't feel sound underfoot. And that might be one where in your report you write, you know, well, roof did not feel sound underfoot, someone needs to check this out. You know,
right.
And then, because then you're,
right.
Someone's going to have to go and either remove plywood or remove drywall and take a visual look at something. Or, you know, did not feel sound underfoot, recommend further visual evaluation
mm-hmm.
of structure.
Right.
And at that point in time, you've done your due diligence.
Right.
You've said, I think there's a problem. I can't see that there's a problem, but someone else should come and do some more investigation to determine what the problem is. And it's the same way like you're talking about the walls and stuff. And you can't see a wall, but you go out there and the stucco's all cracked to hell.
Or
you'll be like,
you sight it and it's all
right, or
bowed and,
or you know, it's completely out of plane. You're like, okay, I don't know exactly what's wrong here, but something's wrong.
The other side of that coin is you're picking the easy side. Okay, the easy side is I see something wrong, or I hear something wrong, or something feels wrong. But what we don't want the home inspector to be able to do is to walk away from the wall structure if he doesn't see something. We don't want him to be able to walk away from the roof structure if he doesn't see something wrong.
I understand.
And by saying that it's not visible, therefore I'm not going to comment on it, lets him walk away from it. They have to make a comment on the general roof, the general walls, the general...
Right, but then that would go to the point of felt sound underfoot, no visible cracks in the ceiling. I think if you did that in a roof structure and you couldn't see, that covers it.
Right, but we've been, but I think the interpretation that you're giving to the standards is a little bit stretched, because we've always, since the beginning of time, have required the inspector to make the comments on these systems, and if up till now, they have been educated enough and they have been smart enough home inspectors to know that they need to do this and could draw the rhetoric out of their brains to clarify those. Okay? If we have to write our standards and our checklist for people who have no idea about houses because they're going to follow, maybe this new millennials are doing this, they have to follow directions all the way to the end of the game, then I don't think we can do that. But if we can count on the home inspectors to be tradesmen, to be knowledgeable in their field and know that when they're doing a home inspection for a client, the client's going to want to know if the house, if the roof is going to cave in regardless of what type it is.
I'm not arguing.
And use their rhetoric to fill that out. This is what we have always depended on the home inspectors to do, is to use their own rhetoric to qualify their inspection. And I don't think that we should get too involved. I can see that some of these changes do need to be made. But I don't think that we should get too involved in trying to say, okay, over here it says that you can say it's not determinable, but over here we're not letting you do that. I don't think that they are jiving as much as everyone seems to think they are.
Well, then maybe here's the point. Here's the weakness in that argument. The weakness is we all agree to do the inspections according to the standards, right? Not according to the 84-item checklist.
Right.
So that's the weakness. If the 84-item checklist doesn't comport with the standards, then the standards, the checklist loses.
Correct.
The argument, the legal
Correct.
Argument. So, why don't we do this? Why don't we ask the inspectors to agree to the standards and the 84-item checklist as interpreted?
There's a point.
I'm not sure that we can, and I don't know what would happen.
Wait, no, you can do that.
You don't have to adjust the checklist.
The checklist is not required by rule.
It will take time to do something. I mean, it's an idea that will take time to put into place, because we would have to get all sorts of rules passed.
Rule changes take a long time.
John came up with the checklist as a way to help.
A guide.
I love this.
It's just a guide.
And I think this discussion is really great, that we're airing different perspectives on how it's being used out there. This is exactly what we're supposed to do as regulators.
But what we're overlooking is the board rules, specifically the one I quoted earlier. Okay, the board rules say that we all need to be up to par with what's happening in the industry, okay, with what the other people are doing. And the board rules and the industry overall, the qualified home inspectors are making comments on the structure of the roof, whether they can get into it or not.
Well, I would recommend this then. If you think that's what's happening, because I don't think that's what's happening, when I'm in these EAC conferences and I'm talking to other home inspectors that are in there, I ask them, what do you do with the roof you can't see? You can't see it, don't comment on it.
It's extremely rare that you'll see wall structure not visible.
Who does that?
We don't see it in EACs. It's very rare.
I'm sorry?
It's very rare that floor structure, wall structure, are just, they're bagging out of it by saying not visible.
I'm not saying bagging out of it, but if you ask the home inspectors, the EAC inspectors, what their comments are, and maybe poll some home inspectors and find out what the verbiage is.
We see them right in the report in the EAC. We see it all the time.
I'm telling you guys, it's a weakness. It's just a weakness.
No, I get it. It's just super troublesome to allow the not visible. Of course, the evidence of the case, if you say it, your fear is based on a fear of saying it's satisfactory and it's not, okay, right? That's the whole basis of all this. The facts of the case are going to be, wait, was there drywall on one side of the wall? Yes. Was there drywall on the other side of the wall? Yes. So the inspector was extremely limited in what he could see, right? Yes. Okay, then prove, you're going to have to provide a higher level of evidence that he really missed it, right? We all know there's limitations to what we do. We're just saying what this says. It's not acceptable to say not visible, or else you'll get home inspectors in this state that never comment on structures.
You know what would be better?
What I would recommend is make this page at least agree with this page.
Okay.
Because on this page it says it's okay. If you can't see it, don't report on it. On this page, it says something different. I think at least
very
this
good
document...
Yeah.
Well, that's what we're talking about.
That's what we're going to work on.
That's a reasonable expectation. Right?
That's what we're going to work on. But I've done two EACs with you, and the reason we take a stand on this issue, and the reason in your two EACs you banged your head against this, was because it's still very important for home inspectors to report on these five items. It just is. To say not visible and I'm not commenting, it's not acceptable to me. And if I'd have been at those board meetings, here I would have fought to the death on that one. It's just not acceptable.
Yeah, maybe our checklist should say it's not okay to only say not. Okay.
Well,
maybe
that's
just putting
thought.
In the word "only" in there.
I'm just recommending.
Yeah, I'm glad you did.
So that it works and it makes sense when you read them and you compare the documents. When the document doesn't even make sense on page one to page two, there are weaknesses in it and they're unenforceable.
Yeah. Anything arguable is trouble, right, Scott? Did you have some things to add too?
Yeah, just to comment real quickly that. The document is unenforceable simply by nature of the fact that it's simply a checklist. The only thing that matters at the end of the day are the statutes and the rules. And in terms of verbiage for the checklist, the company definitely needs to keep in mind, as well as the registrant, that you can follow a checklist 100% and you get to the board. And Peter's absolutely right. The board is going to go by the statutes and rules. And if it's the checklist is simply a document that a practitioner can use to see if they are probably operating within the statutes and rules. It is not going to definitively ensure you are operating within statutes and rules. And if a registrant relies on this document, they're going to get you in a lot of trouble ultimately, because this has no legal standing whatsoever.
Right.
Yeah, like so, substantial compliance, not 100%.
Right, so what that means to interpret that is that I really should have the standards in mind rather than the checklist.
Yes.
Okay, so
the checklist will help you try to make sure that you've met the standards, that you will be regulated by the rules and standards.
But don't forget, you know, this board has its own authority, and then the civil court system has additional abilities.
Right.
So as much as anything, this is almost an advisory, like this is what, you know, you could encounter in the world out there. Right. I would almost say that you could say it is not advisable instead of acceptable. It is not advisable
to only say.
And to only to not only visible.
Right. And there's another thing. If you fall back on the standards, you're going to get hung. Because the standards say that you can walk away from these systems by saying not determined, blah, 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 but they also require you to give a reason. And the reason that you give is the rhetoric we're hoping to draw out of all these home inspectors to tell us what their limitations are on inspecting that roof. So the standards do tell you that you can say, no, I can't see it, but they're also going to want you to add to that. You see what I'm saying?
Right. In other words, if you... sorry, go ahead.
And that's what we've been... And that's why we put together the checklist, is to give you ideas how to add to that, how and where you have to add to that and stuff like that.
I agree.
So we never really put the standard, the checklist together trying to be sure that it was congenial to itself. What we did was put it together simply so that home inspectors could try to stay out of trouble.
Great tool.
You know?
Yeah, it's a great tool.
And so when we fall back on the standards and you don't want to address the condition of the roof, the standards are going to say, well, that's okay. But you need to now tell us why. Okay? And that's all we want.
Yes, does Nick have this document?
Yeah, I just,
okay.
There.
Okay.
I don't have that.
Oh, I put it on your...
Oh, you did?
So is this the first exposure to it?
What?
This document?
Yeah,
just got it today.
Yeah.
Okay. Very good. I just wonder if, you know, if you feel strongly about any of those based on what you've heard, maybe let one of us know. And if you guys would do a task force type project to dial this in, I'm not sure what we'll talk about our next meeting soon, but, you know, in time for that.
And it would be good if the task force members were able to get their draft to us for the next meeting so the other members of the committee have a chance to look at the proposed changes and new language and whatever.
Yeah. They're not going to be substantial.
Right.
We're talking about the checklist.
Yeah,
right?
No, it's going to be some verbiage, some tweaks here and there.
Because
but
I agree with everything, except it's not visible in the structure. I agree with everything virtually starting at 5.1F, working ourselves down. Okay?
Did you write down the concept of changing acceptable to advisable and then adding only before not visible?
I didn't.
Just as an idea.
Yeah.
Not that you'll...
advisable.
What Patty and I were saying is maybe we could write a new intro paragraph for the checklist.
Yeah, look at the first page,
you know,
too, again.
This is just a guide to help you, and we encourage you to refer to it and be as descriptive as you can, however we want to, you know, we could revise that.
Now we're talking to millennials.
It's quite wordy. Congratulations for reading it all the way through. It's very impressive you did, because very few people read that page. That's just the trouble of it.
Well, I mean, and what you're seeing is not practice at the minimum level. You're seeing practice at a higher level.
Yeah, that's true.
Which I know the committee members expect from themselves. I'm glad to see it from a representative of our community.
Okay. Yeah, good thought.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Now I have one more item. It has to do with the standards. On the standards, item general limitations 3.1B. where it says these standards are applicable to buildings with four or less dwelling units and their garages and carports. What does that mean?
Fourplex?
That means that you can do a sixplex and we don't have control.
So if you're doing a 12-unit apartment building, this BTR has no jurisdiction.
That's not what the investigators think.
What do you mean?
Well, I've asked Sean Thacker, for example, if I'm doing a high-rise condo, do the standards apply? Oh, yeah, we'll take that.
Well, yeah, one
just
unit.
A single dwelling unit within that building.
If you inspect five or more of them, then you're getting... Yeah, that's commercial. Well, no. It's a dwelling unit.
That's a good question.
Well, not if it was an apartment complex. Like, if you went to an apartment complex and the apartment complex asked you to look at the whole thing, yeah. That would be more of a due diligence.
I'm pretty sure the idea behind that way back when Ashley put that together was simply that they don't feel that they had jurisdiction for a unit that has more than four, a building that has more than four units in it.
They if don't consider it all.
It's not considered a home inspection. I think it falls more into a commercial.
I think it emanated from the HUD FHA underwriting guidelines, frankly, is where the four units or less piece came into play to have some consistency with that.
And that's also consistent with the breakup between residential and commercial.
Right. That's right. So that's where that came from.
Yes.
You see? Because the rules changed. So I think that if you're inspecting one unit in a six-unit dwelling and it came to the board, that we would probably not be able to review it. But maybe the board has to make a decision.
How about if I'm doing a unit in the middle of a high-rise?
That's why I don't think we have jurisdiction.
I think we do.
I think you do. Looking at one unit in a six-unit thing, if it's a condo,
yeah.
You know, you own an individual unit, so you can... Yeah. If the HOA came to you and said, I want you to inspect the whole entire building, that's a commercial.
Right.
That's the jump. Mm-hmm. Because it's a difference between who the owner is. Because HOAs would own the outside of the building, basically, and the unit owner owns the inside of the building. That's how HOA works. So, you know, it's any kind of condo or anything, same thing. If it's a high-rise condo, you can get a home inspection for your unit. Mm-hmm. For the plumbing and all this stuff, but they can't really opine on, oh, well, you know, the swimming pool on the roof isn't
the boiler
functional.
System.
Yeah. No, the boiler system, yeah. The chiller system.
Chiller system, yeah.
That's commercial.
Yeah, you and know, there's dwelling units not defined in our glossary, but it is a standard term, though.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, yeah, I would think it depends on who your client is.
Mm-hmm.
If your client's a unit owner, okay. If your client's the HOA and they want you to look at the whole building, no. Because that would be more of a due diligence.
So does that help answer or clarify?
Does that make sense?
Perfect.
Or does it make it more confusing?
Well, it looks like it's open to interpretation to me.
No, yeah, I don't think
it's
so.
It's really not.
It's really not. It comes down to four dwelling units or less.
It says it applies to buildings with four or less dwelling units. So if I'm in a building with 40 units, does this apply?
No.
Are you looking at? But you're looking at one unit, the 40 units. But they're individually owned units.
What do you think, Scott?
You know, and I don't mean to be rude at all in this, but I can actually only answer that question if I'm asked by a member of the committee. Because I'm also
okay. What do you think, Scott?
my personal read of this would be, and it would probably comport largely with Jason's, would be that the standards are applicable to buildings with four or less. Dwelling units, okay, that's fine. Yes, the standards for inspection applicable to buildings with four or less dwelling units. So if it's a building with five dwelling units, the standards would not be applicable to that building. However, if you're looking at a dwelling unit within the building, that would be a different matter. So it would depend on whether you're inspecting the building or if you're inspecting the dwelling unit. This would appear to me to exclude inspections of buildings that have more than four dwelling units.
What about mobile homes?
It's a single dwelling unit.
Run away from those. That would be my advice.
Yeah. Actually, they're built quite well. And
yeah. I've looked at a lot of them, and I disagree.
Mobile homes are dwellings.
Yeah.
Modular homes, panelized homes are all
However,
manufactured
a pre-drywall housing. Inspection is not an inspection. Not a home inspection.
Right.
Not until it's at the final stage.
Right.
Okay, so we know where we're at?
Well, I don't agree.
Task force in it?
We know where we're at. Peter.
Surprise.
Thank you for, thank you for being here. We appreciate your time.
Yeah, we stir the pot a lot, and it's kind of nice to have other. Yeah.
I'll stir it up, too. Yeah.
Let's see. So,
all right, so
task force in it.
Peter,
thank you.
Peter, you and I will discuss taking a stab at these, and then we'll have to come up with something prior to the next meeting to send to Melissa. Okay.
All right. I'll write something. I'll just red mark it and send it to him.
Okay.
And then you red mark it and send it back.
And then we'll have a phone conversation at least. Okay.
Yeah. I think it's good, guys. Don't be insulted by stuff like this.
No.
We're here just
we're
to
not insulted.
Try to
oh, no.
help and. You know,
we're not insulted.
You know what?
And like Peter said, it might just be a few little tweets.
There's
you know, one word, only,
right,
or
only.
You know,
right.
Advise, or I mean, just little things.
Yeah, I think it's solvable. Right. It's just, yeah.
It is.
But, you know, I see from, you know, the other points of view, except for people, because we deal with this all the time, you get in your mindset.
Yeah.
Everyone should think this way, and then other people read and go, oh, yeah, I didn't read it that way.
Right.
So.
You know, I one question just came to me, too, is because, you know, there were two issues that we are dealing with, but on the vendor preferred programs, are there, like, statute of limitations on that activity? There's none anywhere, right?
Not in our practice act.
Because there's been historic stuff go on. I've kind of kept a file of some, and I don't know, you know, whether those are, like, there's the... I've seen some really, really awful ones that are clear violations, but I don't know who's involved. So things
that's going to be hard to prove.
And then there's others that are in other conditions, but I wondered if, you know, okay. So now the...
David, before you move on, and I'm only, because we have to work on this, staff created these two pages
here? Yeah.
Okay.
Good job.
You say here that the checklist requires the inspector to describe the type of device. 9.1 requires the inspector to observe and report on the condition, but not require the home inspector to describe the type of device when you're talking about solid fuel heating devices. There's not going to be a change here. Solid fuel heating devices, as soon as they're identified, become a heating system. And further up in the standards, all heating systems have to be described and addressed, okay? So if one shows up here, we don't have to say, now you got to do this. If one shows up as a solid fuel heating device, it then falls into the heating category, and then we'll describe it as that.
Systems?
Same.
You guys were talking about sewage ejectors.
Well, now, some pumps is in the standards. Sumps, is in the standards, I believe. Some pumps are not, or vice versa. So you're redundant on the sump pumps with the sumps, okay?
For a solid heating device.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you go in and you observe they have a pellet stove.
Okay.
But you're not responsible for starting the pellet stove and determining if it works.
No, but we do have to
observe it.
Observe the condition and give the type of it.
Right. And we have to try with normal operating controls, though, right?
Right, but if it's a pellet stove, you're not going to go over to the backyard and get the pellets and dump them in there and start it on
fire. If it's capable, though, wouldn't we try it?
And at the right season, it might be operating.
Well, it might be operating when you go in, but
so
in the
you
middle
have
of summer,
to,
you're not going to
you'll
keep
just
on.
Disclaim that. You'll
right.
disclaim the operation, but you can still give condition and type.
Clearances to combustible is the important stuff, right?
Right.
Okay, and... And then with sumps are not in the standard, but sump pumps are.
And same with sumps, right? You guys don't have to engage the sump.
So you can pull the sump out and go,
make
and
the flow pop
sump
the
pumps
make it go.
Should be added to the standard. So we're going to add that to the checklist.
Well,
so we're going to add
this
that.
This is
okay.
kind of, you
we
know,
will.
Our
I just
question.
Wanted you to know that.
This is the layperson going through. Yeah. This is what we thought.
I just wanted you to know that some of these won't be changed. But then when it comes to the checklist addressing the roofing, addressing abnormal condensation, that should be in there. Okay, so we'll add abnormal water leaking and abnormal condensation.
So
some of these are very good, and others of these are already addressed, and then one structure not visible, I don't agree with at all. Okay, so we'll fight.
You'll never
get me there. Polarity ground.
Polarity, yeah.
Yeah, what did you guys think of that one? I was not sure how that works.
All right, when you test a ground fault, it's not going to work unless you have the proper polarities and grounding. So it, in essence, once you have an outlet that you have to test polarity and ground if it's within 6 feet of a wet area, the rules have changed to include ground fault protection, which just makes it even better. But once you jump to ground fault protection, the polarity and ground have to be tested in order, or checked in order for the ground fault to work. So it's, once again, not going to be a change.
Okay, so maybe we just need to word it better.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Well, there's no overlap between the GFI requirement and the
ground
and the normal testing of outlets. Right. So we need to see where that overlap is, and I think that's where there's a little ambiguity here.
Well, not really, because once you jump to a ground fault protection, you have to meet all the others to begin with.
Right.
Otherwise, it isn't going to work.
We'll look at it anyway. I would suggest, though, we take the opportunity to make a complete pass at the checklist and not just these questions.
Right.
That's a good call.
I think it's a good idea. And think about writing to a fifth grade level. Rather than, you know, because, I mean, all right, we're not fifth graders. We're a little better educated, but we're not in your field. And we still need to understand, as part of the public, what you mean. So the way you explain it is great, because lay people can understand that. Assume maybe home inspectors who haven't been in the practice as long as you guys need that explanation.
I'll do it as soon as the engineers and architects do it. Okay, I'll start writing for the general public and the rules as soon as you do.
I do. Report,
I don't mean in your report.
I mean down to a level.
I don't mean
that's why I use terms like squishy.
Right. That's your evidence.
Because you know what? Anybody you ask, what's squishy mean? Oh, it's soft. There you go. It's,
I don't mean in your reports. I know you do, but I mean in your standards.
Oh,
you know?
Well, yeah.
How are we going to do that?
It's hard, you know, but my husband's a lawyer, and he always tells his clients, document everything as best you can. And that's free legal advice from me to you, even though I'm not supposed to.
Although it's not actually legal.
Not.
my opinion.
Not endorsed.
Yeah.
Your mileage may vary.
I was just making sure he was awake. You know.
There you go.
It's not actually legal advice.
just the last little piece
is heart skipped.
But we do have examples. In the checklist, we have example verbiage in the checklist, and I know that it's.
But not a. It's not an.
And we changed all the IEs to EGs.
To EGs, right. The EGs. Yeah.
And it's not a liability, an exculpatory type language that we're advising.
It could include such as an example.
Yeah. Okay.
So if we had to provide any further clarification by way of examples to further clarify, that may be acceptable, right?
And I think
okay.
I should put this claim
you know where I'm going with this, Peter.
I do. We're not
all right.
Saying you need to use this
I do.
Language,
all we have to do is hope Nick likes it. That's
so hopefully
all right.
That'd be great.
Okay. Thanks so much for processing that.
This is a good one, even without Randy, you know?
Yeah.
Poor Randy.
I'll tell him all about it.
Okay, good.
5D is Peter's going to be here forever.
What?
Appointments and reappointments of HERS
this is really
committee
a
members.
Is housekeeping issue for you guys?
Yes.
Last time we looked at appointments was after the call. Well, February 2018, so it was because Paul was joining, and as you can see from the minutes, we're behind for the position Dave serves, which is the smaller county, and soon Peter's term will be up, so for you to think about is whether you want to be reappointed. I would encourage you to, if you do want to, just indicate that. And then I think we should be fair to the public and put out there to see if anyone else might like, you know, to be on. And just, we'll let the board decide that, but it's time.
Do you need that in writing?
Yeah, I think that'd be great.
No, he's going to be on.
Letters of interest.
As long as I'm here, you guys are here, so suck it up. And I'm going to be here forever, apparently.
I agree.
Yeah,
you should be.
So,
you're good.
So what do we need to do if we choose to stay as part of this committee?
Your term is not up until...
Oh, I got another year.
Letter of interest.
You're good, but okay. I would encourage David and Peter, if you want to continue, just write us a letter saying you would like to be considered because you know your term is soon to expire. And what we'll do to provide notice to the public about this is just put something on the website that says if you're interested, vacancies will be available on the Home Inspector Committee for Board Consideration, and encourage folks to send in letters of interest and CVs, that sort of thing.
What would the terms be that you're volunteering for?
2 year?
This three. Doesn't 3 year. Require a specific term.
It's 1 at 3 and 2 at 2 is the way it's generally done.
That's right. They were staggered, right?
Yeah.
We staggered them the last time.
But we did threes because Paul came on in 18.
2018, right.
So his is 21, so I think we did threes.
Yeah, so we can ask the board for 3 year terms. Yeah.
No, I just wondered. Okay.
Okay.
Very good.
And I think Dave's was coming up quick because you took over for Randy.
For Randy,
right.
We had to switch him around.
Right, yeah. We need to reappoint.
Do you know how long it takes me to get here now? But Randy sucked it up. He didn't whine like I am.
And that, and yours is the hard position
it is.
Because it's outside Maricopa County.
And I checked it because I worried that Coconino County was getting big, but it's actually, we're still okay. Because that'll be like a rule change someday.
Yep,
if
we're going to have to.
Continuation.
Right.
But we're still quite a long way.
I mean, I don't know that we're ever going to get volunteers for that position, Dave, so you may be on forever. Like,
yeah, it's definitely the hard one.
Because it's hard for people to drive, you know, even in Maricopa County.
How long did it take you?
Well, I did it in 2 stages. So I have a house in northern boundary of Maricopa County, but then I came to that house and then went to him. And that one was still hour and a half. So.
Wow, yeah.
And you're just praying no crashes. Which
I know, the traffic is getting really
It's taking me an hour to get from Gilbert to here.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
even in
it's
there.
Getting crazy.
Yeah. That's okay. We have a board member that comes from Kingman, so.
Ooh, yeah. That's brutal.
And Tucson.
And Tucson is the best game.
But even you know, Pima and probably now Prescott's over 400,000. So.
Oh, I doubt it. Yavapai? Bigger than
Prescott's only 40,000.
Oh.
Like I looked up Coconino County, it was only like 170 something.
Okay,
I was like really surprised. With Flag? Uh-huh. I don't know. Anyway, okay. We'll work on that.
Thanks, guys.
Yes. And, so the next one is...
When do... I know Paul's got a year, but when do you and I have to get our letters in if we want to do it?
Probably right away.
Well, his is up.
Yeah. So yours is up.
Right away.
Yours is up in January.
January?
Might as well do them right away, Peter, because we want you in there.
I better write that down.
Okay, and...
Which, if you put it out to the public, I might not make it, and then I can go home.
And don't count on it.
Letter of interest.
It's a nice spot.
So our next agenda item is the director's report.
Yes, and I've asked Kurt to access the numbers for all the cool home inspector stuff. I don't know if you can put it up on the screen. Or?
I can once I can access it, being kind of slow with me right now.
All right.
Ooh.
I guess if we go and get the hard copy, I just...
Did I get hung under the collar again today?
There.
I did, didn't I?
Just the monthly numbers that you were like...
Yeah, you were hot.
I got hot.
I got a little hot at the end because he's got away with it twice. I hope he stuck to it.
Let's
see.
Sure. Oh, here we are. Okay. So, as you can see, this was last month's numbers, so the end of July, we had 17 home inspector applications that came in. 45 were pending based on where they were in the process, from the new ones to those who were being evaluated. And then 52 renewals, which is pretty good. 491 active firms of home inspectors. And then how many total?
It looks like 1,096.
I want to say the last time I looked, it was like 850 active home inspectors. And
a lot of single people.
So that 17 new applications was over what time period?
A month.
1 month.
So that was it's a pretty active month. Let's see if this one is the same. Okay, here we go. So
home inspectors, 887.
So. 887, there you go. Wow. So even higher. And this was July, so we had...
Oh my goodness.
What'd you do?
I tried to zoom in on it.
Okay, so... the date up at the top is not correct where it says December 28th. So last month we had 8 new applications. And it doesn't show, Kurt, how many were in the process. So presumably all 8 of those have been granted. And then 887 total home inspectors and...
532 firms.
Yeah, 532 firms. And you'll see Kurt indicates in the in-between column that's 6 fewer licensees than last month. And that's not unusual. We have people who go delinquent, fall off, get canceled, that sort of thing. So, and also 5 fewer firms. But firms re-register all the time. So we may recapture those 5 firms this month, or we may have more than that this month. But that gives you a good number of everybody that we process. And last month there were almost 30,000, 29,762. And that number fluctuates by up to a few hundred each month. Just because, again, people will fall off as delinquent, and then they can renew with a late penalty. So, yeah. Lots of engineers.
Yeah, lots of engineers. Mm-hmm. Right now, we're still on paper processing for firm registration, correct?
The payment portal is now available online, so you can do firms online.
Okay, because when I just filled mine out, I didn't see any online option.
It just happened yesterday.
Okay. So okay.
Really?
We're processing. It started actually right before the last board meeting where DOA finally got the online availability, but our smart staff here decided to taper it to make sure that who was applying online was doing it without glitches. So now it's available to everybody.
It's just not, here it is. You go to the renewals page and all of a sudden you see a link to it. So we're not casting it out there quite yet. I think we're waiting just a little bit longer.
Oh, that reminds me. I'm sorry. This is a little bit of a move backwards. But as it relates to how the website exists, it seemed to me that the checklist supplement was only in the buried in the application process. Which
that's possible, although I think it's available if you generally click on the website, you should be able to get the checklist.
I could not find it.
And we sure want the pool checklist right next to
it. It was there.
So I have for registrants home inspector supplement documents.
Oh, wow.
So when I click on that, the first thing you see is the checklist.
I'm sorry.
And then there's the pool
spa,
affidavit. A for report writing, financial...
So that's under 4 registrants, then?
It's 4 registrants and then home inspector supplement documents.
I must have missed it. I'm sorry.
Sometimes it's hard to navigate through. And Doug has an update on the enforcement cases for home inspectors.
The enforcement cases?
Yeah, well, it's just a recap from FY19.
Yeah, appreciate that.
In June. So last year, last fiscal year, we received 47 total home inspector complaints. And of those complaints, to date, 12 of those were closed with discipline, 20 were closed without discipline. There's 3 pending in hearing and 12 pending investigation stuff. So just a general.
I appreciate that. What is the fiscal year here?
July 1 to June 30.
So we just concluded.
Yep, so we've started opening 2020 complaints.
Okay.
This will be the first board meeting agenda where you see those. And I do highlight those as well in my director's report to the board. So they see the licensing numbers that you saw, and then they see the numbers that Doug provided to you. Now, his were specific to home inspectors. They're going to be more enforcement numbers for what we're doing with engineers and architects.
So that sounds kind of low, 4 a month? That's high, though, as a
for
percentage?
You guys, yeah, that's pretty high.
Well, again, we deal with the we deal with
surveyors.
You have direct contact with the public.
Yeah, it's one land half of 1%.
Do as well, and we do have a higher percentage of complaints for land surveyors than we do for the engineers and architects.
Yes, a lot.
Because of that public face that you guys have.
They just don't understand the
nature.
Well,
and some are more colorful
than
others.
Not,
yeah, I know.
And they're not real kind to each other sometimes.
Yeah, I know.
So it's been an interesting time, and given obviously what's been in the press about safety here, you guys should know that we are taking that seriously, and I've talked with the Department of Administration about safety and security during board and committee meetings here. So initially I talked about wanting a panic button in this room. We do have one at the front desk, but obviously when we're here in a committee meeting or a board meeting, people at the front desk might not necessarily know what's going on here, and the access to this building and into our suite is pretty free and open. So we had a meeting, Michelle and I, with security advisors, and what we're going to do is invest probably about $1,500 in getting wearable panic buttons is what
oh,
they
good
request.
Lord.
What good's a panic button?
So, like, if Doug, Patty,
so someone,
and I, and Rob...
So somebody knows where to find the bodies?
Yeah,
that's exactly
if
what it
we
is.
If see somebody pull out a weapon or...
Can somebody carry a weapon, please?
Or charge the board
that's
while push
the
button, and then DPS knows directly that there's
where our
a
bodies
problem
will be.
Here. Exactly.
Is there somebody in this building with a weapon? Like, is there somebody authorized to carry a weapon in this building?
Well, Department of Gaming upstairs has law enforcement agents. But again, they might
can the
not
panic
know
button let
here.
Them know?
No, it would let DPS know.
You're right.
Well, then
and here's where our bodies
find
are.
The bodies.
Well, what
here's where I am.
We haven't had the problem with the committee yet, but at the board meeting.
What are we expecting?
You never know. Some disgruntled licensee or someone.
We've done EACs where I felt a little uneasy.
We have DPS come.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. No, that makes sense.
We usually hire a DPS officer to come and sit in the boardrooms if we know
it's contentious or something.
Yeah.
Okay.
So just for your safety, that's going on
and then everyone's
here.
Well behaved.
So we might be wearing, at your next meeting, panic buttons.
Like
this might affect my letter of.
I just as an administrator, I don't want to be flippant about public safety.
Yeah, no, that's
you know, especially for volunteers, my staff, who are like my family, and the public that come. You know, we have to be more aware. And yeah, it sounds silly, but I don't want to be responsible for not doing the best we could.
Good job.
Anyway,
I say we just put plexiglass between us and the people.
Or can we? How about
say we all just get a
three-foot
holes in it? You the top of your rope, drill holes like you do at the bank.
Or could we all get a bulletproof backpack?
Well, you know, I would buy flak vests, but they're really pricey. And
the backpacks are only like $100 or $150. $1,500 to buy 10 of them.
Yeah, the plate you put in goes to $1,500.
I like the plexiglass.
I think we flipped one of these. This is fucking beast.
I like just putting our weaponry on the table. So
me too.
And,
me too.
Well, there's the sign.
Oops. Okay. Oops. Okay. Oops. Move on.
That's my report.
That's all. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're the best. Thank you so much. And then next is item number 7, committee chairman's report, and I don't have anything to report. So future agenda items, if we could have A and C kept on, I don't know if we can predict anything else that we see that we might want to add, but I think ANC.
So there's nothing we can do on the vendor preferred program at this point.
Oh, vendor preferred.
I'm going to see if I can. I've sent out emails to Department of Real Estate. I'll see if I can send another. And then, like I said, we'll write an article about the complaint that's pending formal hearing. Send it off.
Is there reason to believe that this current complaint might kind of push our hand a little bit in having someone render a decision?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good.
So do we want to keep it on, do you think?
So maybe we keep it on for that purpose.
Do you want to report about it?
Yeah.
So
I don't know what could be made public and what can't be made public on that. Maybe.
Right now the complaint is public. So
the complaint is public?
Is public, and then whatever settlement or final order the board enters into would be public.
How would we look that up?
Filed at the Office of Administrative Hearings,
right.
Or I don't know.
The complaint, the licensee's name is Scott Fidel.
Yeah.
So
the case information, would that be online?
The Office of Administrative Hearings, I don't know my way around their website particularly, so I couldn't.
But we could release the complaint if you want a copy of it.
Yeah,
could we at least get a report on it?
Just to stay knowledgeable, you know.
Just to get a report on it for next agenda.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks.
Online.
Oh, because I had to use this too. It's just OA has their portal. You enter the portal and these are the user and the password to get into it for anybody who's using it. So Jen in general. And you just enter that in. Yes?
Jen?
We're off the agenda.
It's very good.
Okay. And then future meeting. What is there urgency to this, do we feel like?
They want that its board to take a look at what you and I come up with here.
Yeah. Can we
always
go to early November, or
I was gonna say if you think that's
because I don't what's the timing of is there
well,
a timing?
Well, we have looked at the checklist in November.
November 1st. Yeah.
But if you guys want to meet before, that's fine as well. And then the board could make the decision on the checklist
before.
Updates.
So maybe do an October or something?
Yeah, whatever.
We don't do a November meeting.
Yeah, we don't have a November board meeting, so.
December 10th.
That sounds like a perfect plan.
So October-ish?
No, November. Yeah,
November.
Do it in November?
Can we go early November, maybe? Does that make sense?
December 10th is that we don't have a November meeting, so.
Yeah, so if we have a November meeting, then the board can look at our work in December.
Yeah. So how about, what are our typical days? Used to be Tuesdays, Wednesdays.
Tuesday, Wednesday.
Want to do the 5th?
Could do the Tuesday, the 5th.
I'll be in Thailand.
That's election day.
Thailand? Fun.
I could do that Tuesday the 5th.
But would we like to work around the schedule?
No, you don't need me here. That's
are you sure?
I've been gone almost the entire month of
November. Okay.
So if you wanted to meet earlier, like in late October, then Patty could be here.
I'm sure you can survive without me.
Yeah.
Okay, you guys make the call.
I could do last week in October.
I can't.
I might struggle with that one.
5?
The 5th?
November
5th? Tuesday the 5th?
Yeah, okay. November 5th.
It seems so long from now.
It does. We're getting our summer break in the fall. Okay, so
that should hopefully give you gentlemen enough time to
do the task force
work out
chores.
What you want.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I think we just have one more motion to make.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
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 This meeting is adjourned at 11:45.
Thank you.
Thank you.